Rabbi Shmuley Yanklowitz is the executive director of Valley Beit Midrash in Phoenix, Arizona. He is an activist, an educator, and an author. Rabbi Shmuley wrote a meditation on the tragic human situation in Syria. It's something you're really going to want to read. It's available in the On Faith section of the Washington Post, and we'll link to it from our website, but it also moved me enough to want to talk with the rabbi here on State of Belief Radio. Rabbi Shmuley, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you so much.
Please talk about what moved you to write this article, which I hope you don't mind I called a meditation.
Thank you. No, I certainly don't mind at all. I really struggled in my prayer on Rosh Hashanah when I was leading a congregation to really pray, feeling that such a state of distress on what's happening in the world with over 100,000 killed, I mean, just millions displaced, and just feeling that we're dealing with an unprecedented tragedy. Well, unfortunately, it's not unprecedented, but something that really touched my soul in the deepest way, just thinking of the men, women, and children who are struggling so deeply. You know, the death toll in Syria now is higher than the Bosnian genocide. Mm-hmm. And the world continues to stand by. And so I really feel that I'm approaching Yom Kippur, the most solemn and intense day in the Jewish calendar, that I can't and really won't let myself get this off my mind, that this is what religion is about for me. It's about opening our hearts and souls to feel the pain of other people.
You are, I know what you wrote says that you are very sensitive to the connection between what's happening in Syria and Yom Kippur. Will you make that connection very clearly for us?
Yeah, I certainly will. You know, I think there's two connections for me. One is that it's a day where, on the Jewish calendar, where we really atone for our wrongdoings in the past year. But it's not only our wrongdoings, it's our missed potential. And I feel that as human beings, especially as Americans, we have so much potential to create social change in the world. And I really hold myself accountable for not doing enough on such a crucial issue. You know, since 2011, the Syrians have been pleading for help from the world. If you look on YouTube, you'll see these protests calling for no-fly zones and everything else. So on the one hand, I feel like I really have to beat my chest, having not done enough in the world for this. The second bit is that the one of the most powerful prayers in the liturgy of Yom Kippur is called Unatana Tokef, where we basically humbly submit that we don't know who will live and die in the coming year and pray for life. And it really, that same prayer struck me on Rosh Hashanah, the sense that while I'm sitting in, you know, a comfortable synagogue praying, there's people fleeing for their lives. And so the intensity of the day and holding myself accountable for not meeting my potential really has awoken me to feel very in touch with what's happening over on the other side of the world.
I think you're also in touch, obviously, with the relationship between liturgy and revolution. Talk for a minute about the need for liturgical movements to become revolutionary movements.
Well, thank you. You know, in my view, I'm not sure that if I'm relatively sure that prayer is not magic. I don't ask for something and then just get it. I no longer embrace that reality. For me, prayer is primarily about stirring my heart to do God's will, so to speak, or, you know, and or live to my conscience, the highest morality I can think of. And so I think that prayer is a subversive, can be a subversive revolutionary type of activity, mm-hmm, that really challenges our comfort zone to get out of our chairs, get out of our pews, and get into action. And I think it's a way of holding ourselves accountable to live to our ideal potential.
Yeah. I often speak of prayer, think of prayer as being a means of addressing a situation, the outcome of which is for us to try to be answers to our own prayers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's really well said. One of the quotes I shared in the Washington Post on Faith article you mentioned was, sometimes I want to ask God why God allows poverty, famine, and injustice in the world when he could do something about it, but I'm afraid he might just ask me the same question, holding ourselves accountable.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
I want to share something with you that we heard on this show some weeks ago while marking the first anniversary of the Oak Creek Gurdwara massacre. The son of one of the victims is now an activist against hate and violence. His name is Pardeep Kalika. And here's what he said about what he calls his post-traumatic growth in talking about the helplessness so many of us feel when there's a disaster that seems to not involve us directly. Here's what he said. Everything bad that happens, I say, that's my fault. I didn't do enough about it. And as long as we in America start to say, this is my fault, then we'll keep this from ever happening again. And those words came to mind reading your piece because you write, quote, I feel a touch of hypocrisy asking God to seal my soul in the book of life when I myself have not done enough to avert deaths and atrocities in Syria. I mean, that really hit me like a brick. And you've already alluded to it, but talk a little bit more about it. It's so important.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, I really feel like I don't want to just preach from on high and, you know, pray as magic. I really want to live my life as best as I can. And I every Yom Kippur, I realize how much I've failed at doing this, but try to live as a model for, you know, giving my best to address the suffering of the vulnerable in the world. And I really feel so intensely this year that we can't be stuck in moral ambiguity. These issues are so complicated, you know, foreign policy and military intervention, this and that. But there's so many positive ways to make change, whether it's addressing humanitarian needs, whether it's helping to shift the discourse, whether it's through advocacy. And I really feel that we can't just sit back and complain and preach and this and that, but get out there and do it. And, you know, as humans, we're so infused with self-interest, you know, the sense of praying for my life, which Jews around the world are going to do this Friday night and Saturday. But I really feel that, you know, there's a Jewish teaching that God only hears the prayers of those who pray for others.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just sort of add to that, that those who act for others, we may be confused and how to do that, but I think if we come together and we're committed to action, that we can be very hopeful.
Yeah. I was thinking about, as a young person, my parents insisted that each of us say our prayers at night, and I can remember getting into the habit of lying down and saying, God, you know what all the problems are. Please do something about them. And you gave what I think is one of the best answers to knowing how a prayer is answered. You don't say that peace will come for you praying about peace. You say you'll know that your prayers are answered if you are led to stronger and more effective action. And the difference between those two understandings of prayer is cosmic almost. And how did you come to that?
You know, it's a really challenging issue for me, and I have felt for a while that the good obviously suffer, and a lot of the evil, so to speak, prosper, and it's inexplicable. And I've come to realize that in order to actualize free will in the world, for humans to really make moral choices, God has to humbly remove God's self from the world. And we can no longer live with, I don't mean to put it down, but what I have viewed as sort of an infant theology, that as infants we think our parents will take care of everything and God will take care of everything. And in this world, it simply doesn't work this way. God has entrusted us to handle this world and to take responsibility. And And God, I believe, in a sort of a liberation theology kind of way, is sort of crying and cheering from the sidelines, and maybe at times intervening to support, but in ways that I certainly will never understand. And this has really helped me to take more responsibility rather than let me off the hook. You know, the great philosopher David Hume once wrote that we humans are more concerned with the stubbing of their own toe than they are with a death on the other side of the world. And this is one of the tragedies of the human condition, that we are so infused with self-concern. And that's part of the way we're wired. We don't have to feel tremendous guilt about that. But I do think that prayer is trying to get us to expand our realm of concern, our sense of empathy for others that we don't even know. Look, I mean, everyone knows that there's a conflict between the West and radical Islam right now, and the Jewish community has particularly been vulnerable to this. But I feel like I'm not praying for or acting for, a group that we're in conflict with. I'm praying for humans, and I'm acting for humans. And
right.
I think we have to remove those boundaries, and that's part of what prayer does also, is reminds us of our core humanity, that we're not members of one faith. We're just humans standing before, humbly before an amazing God.
Rabbi Yanklowitz, what else should we be thinking about with the High Holy Days just passed and the Jewish New Year unfolding?
You know, I think the main thing we can all be thinking about is, where is my unique power? I really think in the 21st century, we feel very powerless to create change. And I think that all of us are in positions and in relationships and in locations where we have access to create some kind of change, whether it's for a custodian who is underpaid, whether it's for a domestic worker who is mistreated, whether it's for advocacy on an international issue. I feel that we all have access to do something for other people in a systemic, sustainable way. And the question is, how can I actualize my potential to use whatever access I have, whatever power I have in society to help other vulnerable people? And I pray and I hope that this coming year will be better for all of us, especially the most vulnerable in the world.
Mm. You mind if I ask you what you're going to be talking about on Yom Kippur?
You certainly can. One of the main things I'm going to be speaking about is about the reality of death and that we all are going to die. You know, in Yom Kippur, we dress in all white, or many people wear all white, and we fast, and it's as if we're in mourning, removing ourselves from food and marital relations and drink, and even wearing leather shoes. And it's almost like we're preparing, in our burial shrouds for death. And I think once we realize how close death is for each one of us, that it's really just tomorrow, we never really know when that moment is, we should feel a sense of urgency to really leave our mark upon this world. So I hope to convey a message like that, but many sleep during sermons. So I have a good reality check that op-eds and sermons only go so far. Really, it's outside in the world that we need to act to create change.
Rabbi Shmuley Yanklowitz is a modern Orthodox rabbi. He's an activist, educator, and author as well. You can read his Yom Kippur thoughts on the tragedy of Syria in the Washington Post's On Faith section. Rabbi, I honestly can't imagine sleeping through one of your presentations. And I can tell you that though I am not Jewish, my Yom Kippur thoughts and observance will embrace what you've told us here on the show today. And I really do thank you for the writing you're doing, and I thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Your words are so touching and meaningful to me. I wish you so many blessings and so much success. Thank you so much.